Thank you for downloading this Council on Foreign Relations podcast. CFR is an independent national membership organization and nonpartisan research center. For more information, please visit us online at cfr.org.
Good afternoon from New York, and welcome to this Council on Foreign Relations Religion and Foreign Policy conference call. I'm Irina Faskanis, Vice President for the National Program and Outreach here at CFR. As a reminder, today's call is on the record, and the audio will be available on our website at www.cfr.org. We are delighted to have Rona Pelagal with us today to discuss the crisis in Central African Republic. Rona Pelagal is the Deputy Director of the Africa Division at Human Rights Watch. Her current role focuses on ensuring the quality and integrity of Human Rights Watch investigations and strategizing on advocacy activities to promote human rights improvements in Africa. She has also served as Vice President of the Near East Foundation and consultant for the Open Society Institute. Welcome, Dr. Pelagal. Thank you for joining us today. It would be terrific if you could begin by giving us an update on the situation in the Central African Republic, as well as some background on the origins of the conflict and the role that religion may or may not be playing.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be here and to be briefing you today. Let me start off with just a little bit of background about the current conflict in the Central African Republic. There has been actually nearly decades of conflict in the Central African Republic, but the most recent crisis is about a year old. What happened was a coalition of groups from the country's northeast joined together and launched a coup against President Bozize. The coalition was called the Seleka. They are predominantly Muslim, representing people from a part of the country that is very undeveloped and in some ways, marginalized or neglected. And we're talking here about a very poor country in the middle of Africa, landlocked, surrounded by Chad, South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, the Republic of Congo, and Cameroon. The Seleka, upon taking power, launched essentially a rampage throughout the country, demolishing villages, setting them afire, leading to massive displacement, a huge humanitarian catastrophe, and contributing to many deaths. In response to the Seleka campaign, a group of people who were formally constituted to fight highway robbery, called the Anti-Balaka, Balaka means machete in the local language, Songo, they came together to retaliate against the Seleka and also to ostensibly take power. The Anti-Balaka then, in addition to fighting the Seleka, themselves started to commit horrendous abuses, and also started to do so using religious language and terminology. The Anti-Balaka are predominantly Christian and animist, and they started to talk about ridding the country of Muslims to retaliate against Muslims for their perceived support of the Seleka, who are Muslim. Things came to a head in December, when the Anti-Balaka effectively took Bangui, the capital. There was massive fighting there and around the capital. In January, the Seleka basically were forced from power, and a new president was installed by the end of January 2014 by the name of Catherine Samba Panza, the former mayor of Bangui, the capital. There has been a peacekeeping presence in the Central African Republic. First, there were some regional peacekeepers there, and there were some French peacekeepers. The regional peacekeepers became an African Union force. The French peacekeepers were amplified so that there were more in country to help stabilize the airport, the capital, and elsewhere. But by the time the larger number of peacekeepers was deployed, the country was already very, very unstable. Human Rights Watch has been reporting on the coup and reporting on the country for more than a year, and we have been keenly attentive to the abuses that have taken place, which include executions, torture, disappearances, rape, and mutilation. It's a very, very brutal conflict. Now, you know, 1 year after the coup was March 24th, 2013, so now 14 months after the coup, what we find is that the Muslim population, which was, I want to say, about 20% or so, 25% of the population, is now gone. The Muslims have essentially all evacuated. They fled the country from the neighboring countries I mentioned earlier, Congo, Cameroon, and Chad, for the most part, in South Sudan. And there are only, in some cases, like in the capital, there were once 100,000 Muslims. There's now probably fewer than 10,000, for example. This is a pattern we see in all of the major towns. Many of the Muslims were traders or pastoralists, cattle ranchers, and as a result of their departure, the economy has also suffered greatly. The Muslims who do remain are imperiled. They are vulnerable to attack by the anti-Balaka and by people who support the anti-Balaka, and some of the Muslims have taken up sanctuary in churches. I want to say here that our only hope in some ways throughout this crisis has been the religious leaders. We have met some incredible religious leaders over the past year, with imams speaking out, for example, in support of reconciliation, for and priests taking in you know, children who are Muslim but who needed to be fed. It's been really the only beacon of humanity that we have seen. We see some enormous challenges right now. I'll give you about five of them, and then I can open up for questions if you would like. One specific challenge is just the enormous humanitarian needs. We're now seeing reports of starving children. There are, and these are both within the country and on its borders in refugee camps. We have, as I mentioned, a number of people who are called Pol. They're the cattle traders. They're, I guess, they're largely Arab. And they are, some of them are stuck in churches, especially in the town of Yaloke. And they have been unable to leave the country as much as they want to. Peacekeepers haven't allowed them to leave. There are just hundreds of thousands of people displaced both within the country and outside of it. And there, you know, the medical challenges are great. When the Seleka took over the government, they demolished health centers and schools and buildings of civil administration. And so we now see a country that needs to rebuild itself from scratch in many ways. And as I mentioned, we're talking about a very poor country to begin with. A second major challenge is that there is a lack of justice in the country. So when abuses happen, when there are killings or amputations or some such, even in full sight of government officials, there's very little capacity to deploy police to investigate or to jail people who are, you know, are of imminent harm to other people. There's just very little security in the country, and as far as we can see, the new administration doesn't yet have a thorough or solid plan to stabilize the country, and this worries us greatly. There is still lingering discourse about the Muslims and resentment of the Muslims because of the abuses committed by the Seleka. So in addition to the need for justice, there is a huge need for reconciliation as well, not without justice, but with it. And that is also a role that religious leaders can play. We are continuing to see abuses. These include abuses by the anti-Balaka, particularly in the western part of the country, by the Seleka, especially in the eastern part of the country. where they appear to be regrouping. And even in the capital, we're starting to get reports of abuses in the capital as well. And finally, although the peacekeepers are there, we are now actually, you know, we are now documenting abuses by the peacekeepers themselves. There were Chadian peacekeepers in the Central African Republic, and they were essentially pulled out because they were caught committing abuses by against the anti-Balaka. The Chadians played a very complicated role because the Seleka draw from some Chadian elements, and the Chadians then were not the same people, but constituting the Seleka and then also constituting the peace forces designed to neutralize the Seleka. That became a problem. But we're now seeing abuses by other members of the African forces in particular. And we've also complained about a general passivity by the French peacekeepers. So I will stop there. That's, I guess, a thumbnail sketch. I apologize if it's overwhelming, but I'm very happy to entertain questions.
Terrific. Thank you very much, Rona, for that that overview and analysis. Let's open it up now to the group for questions and comments.
Thank you. At this time, we'll open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key. That's star one on your touchtone phone now. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, press star two. Again, to ask a question, press star one. Our first question comes from Catherine Marshall from Georgetown University.
Thank you for the briefing. I wondered if you could give us some sense of the landscape of efforts to mediate the immediate crisis. I know that the community of Sant Egidio is involved, but who else? I get the sense of multiple actions, multiple initiatives, and are they coordinated, and if so, by whom?
Yeah, I cannot speak to how well the efforts are coordinated. We ourselves have been involved to some extent in efforts at, well, not we ourselves have been involved in efforts at reconciliation, but we are part of a larger group, a coalition of NGOs that has given a voice to and a platform to a Catholic priest and a Muslim cleric to speak about what is happening on the ground, how it is not fundamentally a religious conflict. It's largely a conflict about poor governance and, you know, massive abuse and impunity for abuse, although it has taken on some religious overtones. There is, as far as I can see, there's no formal effort to bring the parties together. The conflict is still taking place, but there have been efforts to promote the voices of people who are urging a kind of reconciliation and justice for crimes committed.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David Robinson with World Vision.
Rona, thank you very much. And to follow up Catherine's remark, I was in a meeting a couple weeks ago in London. CRS and CAFOD on the Catholic side are working very effectively in organizing the Catholic hierarchy with what's left of Muslim imams. On the Protestant side, it's a little more, a little bit less developed to say. World Vision, Tear Fund, Finnish Church Aid, and some others are trying to get some coordination going. One of the major things on the ground that our team is finding is security of moving from Bangui out to various cities is very, very difficult. And Muslim leaders and clerics are still targets. It's premature to actually be getting people together. Efforts, I would say, preliminary efforts for mediation are starting. You made an earlier comment about the Seleka regrouping. This is one of the major concerns. I was wondering if you could address and the what the status is on the funding for the peacekeeper operation that's supposed to start in September. Do you have an update on that?
Okay, thank you. There's a lot there. I just want to say that the point about mobility is especially critical, and I'm glad that you mentioned it, because there are numerous checkpoints on the roads. The roads are in very bad condition. It's rainy season. It's very hard to move around, and it's very dangerous. We take extraordinary precautions when we travel, and we have run into situations at times. So one of the reasons, in fact, that a humanitarian and other kinds of responses have been delayed was, in fact, because of lack of security on the road. So thank you for flagging that. On the regroupment of the Seleka, yes, we're worried about that too. I don't know quite what this means. What I've seen about the regroupment is that they're trying to become more professional. And I can't tell you whether that's a good sign or a bad one at this point. I guess more professional is better, but I do worry about what that will mean in terms of Seleka control of the territory or committing abuses. We know that they are still committing abuses. And then finally, on the funding for the peacekeeping mission, I just today saw a letter, at least to the U.S. government, calling for there to be further funding of the mission. I understand that a mission has not been as well funded, I think, as people would like, the peacekeeping mission, and so it appears that people are trying to push for more robust funding. I don't have exact numbers on that right now, though.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ari DePater with World Evangelical Alliance.
Yeah, thank you for your presentation. It was very insightful. Coming back to the regrouping of the Seleka in the east or in the north, we continue to hear rumors about involvement of other foreign terrorist groups like Boko Haram in joining the forces of the Seleka. Do you have any information about that? Can you confirm that, or can you shed your light on that? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the question. In my capacity as Deputy Director of the Africa Division, I also oversee our work on Nigeria and have been deeply involved in our work there on Boko Haram. The funding, we haven't been able to nail down the funding of the Seleka, nor have we been able to fund down the funding of Boko Haram, for that matter. I have heard reports of a link between the two. We have not been able to confirm or corroborate those. It is true, of course, that the Seleka include fighters from Chad and Sudan, from the Darfur, but we don't... but I can't speak to how the Seleka specifically are being funded. And so I can't really, I wouldn't jump to make that link yet.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Nicole Phillips with Emory University.
Thank you for your presentation. It seems that religion is somewhat of a foil for economic instability in the country. And so I really wanted to ask a question about the economics, and with the new leadership, new governmental leadership, how is the economics of the country being addressed so that there might be better distribution of funding amongst the different ethnic and tribal groups? And are there outside governments that are helping to bolster the economic status of this African nation?
Thank you. That's a very good question. One of the underlying issues in CAR, which is actually a resource-rich state, is that the revenues have been mismanaged for so long. And this is not something that Human Rights Watch has documented extensively, but other people have, and we know that there are high levels of corruption. We know that the riches of the country have basically been used to benefit the few elite. And the lack of development and the sort of is one, I think, underlying grievance that had spurred at least the Seleka to want to take power. It's not yet clear to me what President Samba Panza is doing. My view is that she's had played a more passive role than I think we would all like. And it's not clear to me that she has addressed the grievances of people, especially from the North, and nor has she addressed the way in which resources will be allocated going forward. So I think that the jury is still out on that. I think it's a really important question and issue, but I don't see it being talked about as much as it should be.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Atani Kakoma with the Crisis Management Initiative.
Yes. Hello. You referenced the spreading of the conflict and with regards to the situation in South Sudan. If you could speak to the regional implications at stake for ongoing unresolved conflict in CAR.
Yes. We are about to document this. We know that there are thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, who have left CAR for Chad, Cameroon, and Congo. What we know is that the people living in those other countries are living in what appear to be quite dire situations and conditions. And so that is, I guess I would say, a hotbed or an indicator of possible instability going forward, not to mention tension with the local residents. We've also been told that the status of the Central African Republic residents in Chad, for example, is a bit unclear. Some people in CAR will refer to the Muslims there as Chadians, but the Chadians are in some cases looking at the refugees as people from CAR. So there also may be questions about the legal status of the people who have been forced to flee, and questions about the extent to which they can return to CAR, which would depend greatly on there being greater security and stability, not to mention a lessening of the kind of racialized and religiously tinged language that we've heard. So it is very much a regional problem, I would say, especially given how many people have fled the country to CAR's neighbors.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. Our next question comes from Diane Randall with SCNL.
Hi, thanks very much. I have a question about media. We were pleased to host the delegation of three religious leaders when they were in Washington, D.C., speaking to policymakers here. And there was some discussion about radio and the availability to broadcast messages of trying to reduce violence. And I'm wondering what the situation is there and whether the religious leaders have a kind of authority that can be heard by people and what effect that might have or what other tools are being used to try to directly reduce violence.
Yes, that's a good question. I haven't actually been to CAR, so I can't really speak to the way in which local religious leaders are communicating their message. But I can say that my experience in many other African countries and in neighboring CAR, that radio is the most important medium there is. And that it's not uncommon for people who are religious leaders to have radio shows or to be guests on radio. So my view is that radio is probably the most important way of getting out this message and something that could and should be used as much as possible. Our researchers have, you know, tried to also spread this message, have met with religious leaders, have even met with members of both the Anti-Balaka and the Seleka, for that matter. to get out the, you know, to promote both human rights education and knowledge about reconciliation and justice. But more of that kind of messaging would certainly be valuable.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Theo Sither with France Committee Legislation.
Hi there. Thank you so much for your presentation, and especially thanks for talking about some of the abuses by the peacekeepers that have been on the ground, particularly the Chadians. So my question is, you know, what are, you know, as the new mandate is set forth and new peacekeepers come on the ground, what are the mechanisms by which, you know, human rights abuses don't get repeated? And do we have a sense of what countries are going to be contributing to the mission moving forward?
That's a very good question. I feel like I should know the answer to that, but the names of the countries are not coming to mind. I mean, I know that Rwanda and Burundi are both contributing forces, and the Rwandans have played a really important role in CAR. The problems that we've seen have been largely by the Chadians, and now we're also seeing we're seeing abuses by peacekeepers from the Republic of Congo, Congo Brazzaville. There will be forces from other places as well throughout Europe, but I haven't seen the exact breakdown, or if I do have, I don't remember what it is right now. But one thing that we would certainly call for is for there to be a vetting of anybody who serves in a peacekeeping force, education and vetting to ensure that there are not rights abusers who are being put in positions of protecting the population, which is very vulnerable at this point.
Rona, what has been the response thus far from the U.S., from the Obama administration?
Yes. The U.S., if I remember correctly, has provided funding for assistance to the peacekeepers. It hasn't provided peacekeepers themselves, but assistance to the peacekeepers, and has provided some other kinds of in-kind support as well. There are efforts right now to get the U.S. to bolster its funding allocation for the UN peacekeepers, but I'm not quite sure whether, you know, that will go through. The U.S. has played mostly, I would say, supportive role in calling for accountability, justice, and more peacekeeping, but it probably has not allocated as many resources as have, say, the French, for example.
Other questions?
Thank you. As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Charlotte Alfred with the Huffington Post. Charlotte, your line is open.
Hi, sorry. I was wondering, Rona, if you could say a bit more about, you mentioned general passivity by French forces and what your concerns were there.
Right. Our concerns, which we've documented before, have been that we have ourselves witnessed abuses that have taken place kind of in front of French security forces, and they essentially did not respond, or they responded but didn't follow up, and that they have not been as proactive, I think, as we would like. I can give you an example of there being abuses in the southwestern part of the country. We documented some really, you know, tragic killings. We alerted, I think it was the French. Don't quote me on that. It could have been the African Union, but I think it was the French. And we told them, like, we're seeing some really terrible stuff in this town. You should go and investigate it. And what we were told was, well, that's not really within our purview. That's not really our mandate. Yes, they could have sort of driven down the road and investigated and didn't. They basically then took off in their helicopter. That's the kind of thing we're seeing, a kind of sort of inflexibility and a failure to respond in a kind of reactive and proactive manner to abuses as they are happening or as they are about to happen.
Thank you. As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star one.
Verna, as we ring for a few more questions to people to queue up, what recommendations would you make to either the Obama administration, or what more can the UN be doing?
Well, I would say that for the Obama administration, we would look for greater support for the UN peacekeeping force. And then for the UN, we would say to deploy that force as rapidly as possible, and in the interim, to work for both, to work together to ensure that both the African Union and French peacekeeping forces are, as you know, as, responding as robustly and proactively as possible. And then I would say investigating, of course, any abuses by the peacekeepers already on the ground. And finally, sending a message to the administration of in the country, the Samba Panza administration, that there is an urgent need for justice and for basic security measures to enable people to restart their lives.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David Robinson with World Vision.
Rana, thank you for everything you've shared so far. What have you found in terms of the government's own moral authority speaking about, for example, the ethnic cleansing of the Muslims, the need for disarmament? Is there a voice coming from the president or anyone else on the need for justice, kind of creating a standard of some kind of moral authority? Is that going on?
It's a good question, and my answer is I don't think so. We've been really disappointed by the lack of messaging by the Samba Panza administration, by the lack of that kind of authoritative moral voice that says, regardless of what religion you are or where you're from, you know, there will, these kinds of abuses will no longer be tolerated. I will personally, you know, investigate and jail any person who commits the kinds of atrocities that we've seen. It's over. We're not doing any more. We will have a reconciliation process. We will have a justice process. We need to move forward. I have not heard that kind of strong language and messaging, and I think it is sorely needed at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from John Denker with United Religion Initiative.
Yes, I was wondering if the Anti-Balaka or the Seleko or any other groups in Central African Republic have been put on the State Department's list of terrorist organizations. I'm asking this in reference to Boko Haram. There was a controversy over its listing.
Yes. I feel like the Seleka leaders have been put on the State Department's list. I would need to sort of verify that, but my recollection is that that has, in fact, happened.
Thank you. Next question.
Our next question comes from James Brinkmuller with U.S. Agency of International Development.
Hi, thank you. Enjoying my thanks with everyone's on this call. You said at the beginning of the call an example of some local clergy speaking out together, feeding children and such. Do you have a sense of the scale of that, how widespread, how much the religious leaders platform in Bangui are impacting that with the three leaders who are speaking out very strongly and have been in the country? And then have there been cases of clergy, of religious leaders doing the negative, you know, fueling the violence rather than helping calm it?
On the latter question, I have no evidence of clergy fueling the violence. The only evidence I have is of clergy helping to protect victims. or people who are at risk of being victimized. I can't say whether or not they have had a positive role in the country, but we do have continuing reports of Muslims in particular sheltering at church compounds. So maybe I could say without being too optimistic that that message has gone out. I can't say that as in a factual sense. I can just say it in terms of we know that there are people seeking shelter in places of worship of a different religion, which is encouraging. I might also note that Human Rights Watch will be honoring a Catholic priest this year for the work he did in literally picking up Muslim children from the street who were polio survivors or who had been abandoned by their parents. We'll be honoring him at a series of dinners this year. So you can keep your eyes open for that. There'll be much more messaging from us on this question in the fall months in particular.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from William O'Keefe with Catholic Relief Services.
Hi there. Thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to be on the call with you. The question of the local government and its capacity and whether it could deliver services, even if it wanted to get a message out, would it be able to, is something that I think is an open question. Could you comment on that?
Yes. I guess I would say that my understanding from our staff is that there are some good people in government, but the government in general has a very low capacity, and there's very little local government at the moment. A lot of it was, of course, destroyed in the past year and is now basically rebuilding. We're seeing a country with a very low capacity in terms of both government and even non-governmental organizations. We believe that, you know, I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but I think that whatever happens in terms of rebuilding going forward, the international community is going to be absolutely necessary in terms of humanitarian relief, in terms of justice procedures, and so forth.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Thomas Yuthup with Friends of United Nations Alliance of Civilizations.
To pick up on a couple of these questions that have addressed this issue of the weak state in the Central African Republic. And my first question relates to the capacity and strength of the CAR military. Does it function? Is it capable of imposing authority? And the second question is related to this president, Catherine Sanz-Pamba herself. She has been accused of falling prey to, partiality by picking ministers mainly from her own region of the Central African Republic. Do you think that she herself has the capacity to actually be an inspiring leader for all Central African Republic citizens? Thank you.
Yes, those are good questions. I'm so glad that you asked them. In the first question, it's actually not clear what the military is at this point. The former military, the FACA, were essentially disbanded or made irrelevant when the Seleka took over. Then the Seleka became part of the operating military. Then the Seleka, when they lost power, it aimed to kind of keep some sort of authority, but then there was no state military to take its place. So for that reason, there is a security vacuum. I mean, my understanding is that President Sanz-Pamba is starting to reconstitute an official military, and there was a ceremony to institute the military, at which there were abuses committed. But it's not clear to me that that military has either any strength or depth or authority at this point, which I think goes to the weakness of the state. And yes, we've heard the same concerns about Samba Panza being partial and not being, you know, necessarily a leader for all Central Africans. And I would say that that is something that we do remain concerned about.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Majid Ashi with Bay State College.
Thank you very much. I would like to ask you a question about the Muslim community in CR. Are they mainly Sunni or Shia? And also the other question is, what is the likelihood of other Muslim-majority countries basically getting involved in the issue and supporting in a military way, militant way, supporting some of the young fighters to fight inside the country? Thank you.
Yes, my understanding is that the Muslims are Sunni, and although Muslims have been attacked and have been forced to flee the country, one of the things that's actually surprised me is the lack of attention from the Muslim world about this, effective ethnic cleansing. So we haven't seen an incursion or, you know, of Muslim forces, and nor am I sort of suggesting that that happen. But I just do think it's interesting that the issue didn't get more attention from the Muslim world.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time.
Lorena, this has been a terrific time spent with you. Thank you very much. Are there any thoughts you want to leave with us before we close?
I don't think I have any closing thoughts other than to thank everybody for their interest and for their very well-informed questions. And people may contact me if they wish with any further questions they might have.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. And thanks to all of you for your excellent questions and comments. As you know, this conference call series is part of CFR's Religion and Foreign Policy Initiative that seeks to connect religious and congregational leaders and scholars from across the country in conversations on a broad range of pressing issues. We appreciate your feedback and ask that you email us at outreach@cfr.org with any suggestions of topics you would like to see covered in this series. Our next call will be on Thursday, June 19th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time with Robbie George, who will reflect on the past 15 years of U.S. international religious freedom policy. We will send out a formal invitation under separate cover. So look for that. And once again, thank you to Rona Pelagal, Deputy Director of the Africa Division at Human Rights Watch, for today's conversation.
Thank you for listening to this Council on Foreign Relations podcast. For additional audio, video, and transcripts of CFR meetings, as well as expert analysis of international news, please visit us online, cfr.org.